The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Good morning, you're listening to WYSO in Yellow Springs. I'm Vic McCunis. I know a lot of you are tuning in right now for WYSO Weekend, and it normally comes your way every Sunday morning during the first half of the 10 o'clock hour. Well, I believe Jerry is on vacation this week. We're going to bring you a special extended Book Nook program starting right after the news. And today, I'm going to be paying tribute to a great man, George McGovern, who would have been 100 years old this month. I interviewed him twice, and we're going to bring you some excerpts from those interviews coming up on the Book Nook. Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, and for those of you tuning in for WYSO Weekend, we are filling in the slot of WYSO Weekend this morning, and the program will be back next week at 10 on Sunday. So we have a special long Best of the Book Nook for you, and today I'm going to be paying tribute to a guy named George McGovern. George McGovern would have been 100 years old this month, and this is from his Wikipedia entry. George Stanley McGovern, born July 19, 1922, died October 21, 2012, was an American historian and South Dakota politician who was a U.S. representative and three-term U.S. senator and the Democratic Party presidential nominee in the 1972 presidential election. McGovern grew up in Mitchell, South Dakota, where he became a renowned debater. He volunteered for the U.S. Army Air Forces upon the country's entry into World War II. As a B-24 Liberator pilot, he flew 35 missions over German-occupied Europe from a base in Italy. Among the medals he received was a Distinguished Flying Cross for making a hazardous emergency landing of his damaged plane and saving his crew. After the war, he earned degrees from Dakota Wesleyan University and Northwestern, culminating in a Ph.D. and served as a history professor. He was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 1956, and re-elected in 1958. After a failed bid for the U.S. Senate in 1960, he was a successful candidate in 1962. As a senator, McGovern was an example of modern American liberalism. He became most known for his outspoken opposition to the growing U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. He staged a brief nomination run in the 1968 presidential election as a stand-in for the assassinated Robert F. Kennedy. The subsequent McGovern-Fraser Commission fundamentally altered the presidential nominating process by increasing the number of caucuses and primaries and reducing the influence of party insiders. The McGovern-Hatfield Amendment sought to end the Vietnam War by legislative means but was defeated in 1970 and 1971. McGovern's long-shot, grassroots-based 1972 presidential campaign found triumph in gaining the presidential nomination, but left the party split ideologically. In the general election, McGovern lost to incumbent Richard Nixon in one of the biggest landslides in U.S. electoral history. Though re-elected to the Senate in 1968 and 1974, McGovern was defeated in his bid for a fourth term in 1980. In 1972, George McGovern had announced that he was running for the nomination again. And I was excited about it because I was not old enough to vote, but I was getting close to being old enough to get drafted to the Vietnam War. And I knew that George McGovern had been trying to get the war to end. And so I was pretty excited that he was running for president. And I heard that he was going to be in town in Des Moines to meet with the editorial board of the Des Moines Register and Tribune. Now, this is back in the day when this is fairly common candidates would meet with newspaper editorial boards. I don't think it's very common anymore. I mean, what's a newspaper editorial board? I believe they still sit down with the New York Times and the Washington Post, but a lot of these regional papers, like the Des Moines Register, I doubt they do that anymore. So we were waiting. It was a very cold night, a winter night, outside the entryway to the Des Moines Register. I was there with my friend Steve and a few other people. And the door opened, and here's George McGovern with a half dozen other people. And there were a couple of cameramen and photographers standing there. And so he stopped and paused and talked to us. And I told him how excited I was that he was running for president. And then the following week, I opened Newsweek magazine. And here's a photo, along with an article, about George McGovern seeking grassroots support in Iowa. And it's a picture of me standing next to George McGovern with my friend Steve. And I was pretty tickled about that. And I still have my copy of Newsweek. I'm so proud of that, to actually be in a photo with George McGovern, who was kind of my hero at the time. And then I got the opportunity to interview George McGovern. He had put out a biography of Abraham Lincoln, and we were all set to call him at his hotel in Chicago. And we had a big blizzard that day, and our phone system was messed up. We could not make the call on our phone system and record an interview. We were getting all this static and rattling on the line. And so I got on my cell phone and I called Senator McGovern up at his hotel in Chicago, and I apologized to him. And I talked to him for about 10 minutes, and he was super nice, and he didn't care that we weren't going to do the interview. And then we rescheduled it. So I did my first interview with George McGovern after all that, and we're going to listen now to an excerpt from that conversation as we talked about that greatest American president. George had written his biography, Mr. Abraham Lincoln, on the Best of the Book Nook.
We just celebrated the 200th birthday of Abraham Lincoln. Many historians consider him to be the greatest president in our history. And there are a slew of Abraham Lincoln books that have just come out to mark the occasion. One of my favorites is a very pithy biography of Abraham Lincoln. It's part of the American Presidents series, and it was written by a fellow who knows a bit about presidential politics, Senator George McGovern. He joins us by telephone from Washington. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be on your program.
Abraham Lincoln, what did you do to celebrate his birthday?
Well, I did a lot. I've been pushing my new book, and I spoke to large audiences four times yesterday on his birthday about the Lincoln book that I have written. I think it's one of the best pieces of writing I've done over the years. It's my 13th book, and I think this may prove to be the best of the lot. Lincoln was indeed our greatest president. I think there's a wide consensus among historians that is the case. His likeness appears on Mount Rushmore in my home state of South Dakota. He's there with George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Theodore Roosevelt. And that monument, especially Lincoln, has inspired me since I was a small boy. So I was glad I had the opportunity to write about the Lincoln presidency.
And you make the case in your book that the greatest act of our greatest president was the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yes, I think actually his greatest achievement may have been preserving the Union. If he had not stood up against the secession of the southern states, some 11 states in the Confederacy, we would have had no United States of America. We'd have had one that greatly diminished in size and population and resources and culture and many other things. So saving the Union may have been his greatest achievement, but on the par with it was the Emancipation Proclamation. That proclamation did not free all of the slaves. It freed only the slaves in the 11 states of the Confederacy, but it led to further steps that eventually culminated in the 13th Amendment, which ended slavery everywhere in the United States.
Senator George McGovern has joined us. He has written a new biography of Abraham Lincoln. You make the case of the Emancipation Proclamation being an example of Lincoln's political shrewdness.
It was an example of his political shrewdness. Lincoln hated slavery throughout his life, beginning with his days as a young man when he first saw slaves being auctioned off in New Orleans. He was horrified to see the mother in a black family being purchased by one planter, maybe the husband by another planter. The children split off, some of them sent one direction and some another to spend their lives in slavery. He thought that was a moral catastrophe for the United States to be involved in anything like the enslavement of other people, especially since we, in our Declaration of Independence, had said all men are created equal. We would now say all people have been created equal. So Lincoln was always against slavery, but politically he knew that a large part of the country was not ready for what the abolitionists wanted, which was immediate freeing of all slaves. He thought that that might destroy the Union to try to push that kind of a program. So he announced that if he could save the Union by freeing all of the slaves, he would do that. If he could save the Union by freeing none of the slaves, he would do that. If he could save the Union by freeing some of the slaves and leaving others in enslavement, he would do that, but the Union must be preserved. Now, Lincoln made very clear that he was willing to leave slavery alone in the 11 states where it existed in what became the Confederacy, but that he would not tolerate slavery in any of the new states coming into the Union. No slavery in the vast public domain owned by the United States government.
And he wrote the proclamation and he put it away in a drawer because he needed to have the right moment.
Yes, he didn't want it to look like a desperation move that he had to do in order to win the war. So he waited for a rather dramatic victory of the Union forces, which came in a timely period. And after that big victory had been won, he then took the proclamation out of his drawer and proclaimed it as an official document to the United States government, putting an end to slavery in all the slave states.
Senator George McGovern has joined us. He's written a new biography of Abraham Lincoln as we celebrate the 200th anniversary of the birth of Abe Lincoln. And what an auspicious time to have our new president take office in the birthday of Lincoln. Lincoln would have been shocked by the presidency of Barack Obama, would he not?
Yes, he would have. I doubt if he foresaw that day. It's possible he did, but I came across no expression of any specific time period when he thought that blacks would be treated equal all across the board, even up to the presidency itself. But I think he would have cheered the day when that were possible.
So in a very big way, Abe Lincoln helped to make the possibility of a President Obama happen.
Yes, and President Obama has said that Lincoln won victories without which he might never have aspired to the presidency, let alone being elected. I'm frankly glad that our new president says that Lincoln is his role model, because you couldn't have one of finer character, integrity, and intelligence than Abraham Lincoln.
And looking at more recent history, do you think that George McGovern also did his part to make Barack Obama our president?
Yes, I think so. I headed up the so-called McGovern reforms of the delegate selection process by which presidents are nominated. The McGovern Commission later became known as the Fraser Commission when Congressman Fraser took my place as I got into the presidential competition myself. That commission provided that women and minorities and young people had to be reasonably represented in the National Convention delegates who select the president of the nominee for the presidency of the United States. Up until that time, women didn't have a fair chance at becoming delegates. Neither did black people, neither did Hispanics, neither did young people. But the McGovern reforms of 1972 opened up the presidential nominating process to all the American people in a reasonable relationship to their percentage of the population. Just by way of illustration, if half of the people in a state were women and the other half men, then each should have roughly the same number of their gender on the delegation that goes to the National Convention to nominate our presidential candidate.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, fact-based journalism in service of democracy. It's the best of the Book Nook, and my interview with George McGovern about his biography of Abraham Lincoln, and we'll continue with that conversation right after this. The best of the Book Nook continues on WYSO, and this morning, fill in the slot normally occupied by WYSO Weekend, and we'll continue right up to the top of the hour as I pay tribute to a man who would have been 100 years old this month, Mr. George McGovern. I interviewed him twice, and the first time I spoke to him about his biography of Abraham Lincoln.
My guest is George McGovern. The election of 1972, when you ran against Richard Nixon, this was a time when we had the silent majority and the building of that Southern coalition, which Nixon really engineered. And in this recent election, we saw some of those Southern states falling away from that long-standing alliance. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think the day of red states and blue states is over. I never did like that delegation of states being described that way. Take my state of South Dakota. It's generally regarded as a Republican stronghold, but when I was in the Senate for much of that time, we had two Democratic United States senators in South Dakota. That happened again when Senator Johnson and Senator Daschle were both in the United States Senate. We've had Democratic governors. We've had the Democrats in control of the state legislature off and on. So we're no longer a blue or a red state. We're, frankly, an unpredictable state. But I think states ought to be treated not with some political label, but as free people who are open to the possibility of change from normal patterns. And I think that's why Barack Obama won this election nationwide by a substantial margin, even though Democrats had lost the three previous elections.
I seem to recall, I think it was in January of last year, that you had an op-ed piece in the Washington Post suggesting that the president at that time and Vice President Bush and Cheney might deserve to be impeached. Do you think that we should move away from all the past rhetoric and the past accusations, or do you still feel like that we should look back at some of the records of the previous administration?
I think our present President Barack Obama would like us to move away from the past and now go forward at a very difficult time in the history of our country. And I bow to him on that point. I think it is true that we don't need a belated impeachment cause or impeachment effort now. Let's deal with this great economic collapse that has occurred in our country. I'm disappointed that more Republicans, especially in the Senate, have not come forward in response to the president's desire to give the Republicans a fair shake. He put three of them in his cabinet, and he's invited Republican senators to the White House. He's tried to make clear that he wants us to work out an agreement that has broad bipartisan support. That would be better than going back and trying to punish some of the sins of the past. Hmm.
My guest is Senator George McGovern. I mentioned to a friend of mine who's a staunch Republican that I was going to be interviewing you, and the first thing that he said surprised me. He said, George McGovern, a true American hero, a true American war hero. I understand that you were a pilot in World War II.
Yes, I flew as the pilot a B-24 bomber. That was the most produced plane of any kind in World War II. I flew 35 missions against the most heavily defended targets in Hitler's Germany and the surrounding countries. And I've always been proud of that. I don't go around wearing my patriotism on my sleeve, but I am proud that I participated in that war because I believe it was one war that we had to participate in to bring about the destruction of Hitler and his allies in Italy and Japan.
I understand you made a very exciting landing on an Italian island.
Well, it was actually a Yugoslav island.
Okay.
It was just off the coast of Yugoslavia. We had two engines knocked out over the target that we hit that day, and we had a third engine that was not running properly, so I was losing altitude. And the only place to make a landing was either the Adriatic Sea, where there were high waves that probably would have torn us apart, or a little landing strip on the Isle of Vis. It was only 2,200 feet long. You ordinarily need about 5,000 feet to land a B-24 Liberator, but we hit the end of the runway, maybe somewhat luckily. We got on the brakes and rode it all the way down the runway and stopped about 25 feet short of the end of the runway, and just a short distance from a hill where the carcasses of injured airplanes had piled up that didn't make the landing. But I got the Distinguished Flying Cross for executing that landing without destroying the plane and without any casualties of my crew on board. Most people get the Distinguished Flying Cross for flying. I got it for landing, and I'm very proud of it.
What a wonderful story. What was it like to run against Dick Nixon?
Well, he was a very clever man, I think an intelligent man, and he did some things that were worthwhile historically, the opening to China, détente with the Soviet Union, the Environmental Protection Agency. He signed into law all those food assistance bills that Bob Dole and I kept sending down there, greatly expanding the school lunch program, food stamps, launching the WIC program. So he did some good things, but he had a streak of paranoia that made him do things that were just irrational. Obviously, the Congress decided that these were impeachable offenses. There was a whole list of places where he had broken the law, violated the Constitution, so it was almost unanimous across the spectrum politically when he was impeached. But he was a tough candidate out on the political hustings. I would say he was a better politician than he was a statesman. He was a difficult opponent, as the results showed.
My guest is Senator George McGovern. I understand that you attended the recent inauguration of President Obama. What was it like? What was the feeling like for you?
Well, I felt like we were making history that day. The first black citizen ever to reach the White House. And the fact, the first one ever to be nominated as the candidate of either party. So that was an awesome day to realize that we were making new history and raising the banner of equality and liberty for all to a new standard. Almost everybody you saw was either smiling or laughing or shedding tears of joy, especially the black people who were just overjoyed that at last one of their number had become president of the United States.
And I kept thinking of the smiles of those who are no longer with us. And one in particular who I thought of was former Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm.
Yes. Shirley ran for the nomination in 1972. And she made a good case, not only for greater rights for black people, and she was a black woman, but also she was a strong voice for full equality for the women in this country, of all colors, of all races. And I thought her contribution was valuable. She had a vision of the kind of America that she wanted this country to be. And I'm glad she was my friend over the years.
And that was George McGovern, recorded a number of years ago, talking about his biography of Abraham Lincoln. And George would have turned 100 this month. He was born in July 1922, an impressive man. And I did a second interview with him a couple of years after that one. And he had written a book called What It Means to Be a Democrat. And we're going to bring you an excerpt from that interview right after this. You're listening to a special hour-long edition of the Sunday version of the Book Nook, and today it's the best of the Book Nook as we bring you a couple of interviews I did with the late Senator George McGovern, who would have turned 100 this month. He was born in July of 1922. And my final interview with Senator McGovern, this recorded a year or two before he died, we talked about his book, What It Means to Be a Democrat. And the beauty of a guy like George McGovern was that he was a politician from the old school. He believed in working across the aisle and forming coalitions with members of the opposition party to get things done for ordinary Americans like you and me. And we need more of that today. We need much more of that. We have such a polarized Congress, such a polarized nation in so many ways, more so than I can remember ever in my lifetime. Right now, let's listen now to George McGovern talking about what it means to be a Democrat.
You state that you were often labeled as a bleeding heart liberal and that you don't have a problem with that.
No, I think our hearts should bleed when we look at the plight of some of our fellow Americans in the slums, in the migrant labor fields, on the Indian reservations, such as we have in my state, these people have very difficult times, and it does make your heart bleed when you think about how well some of us are doing and how difficult it is for others of our fellow Americans. So, yes, I think compassion is very important. It's especially important to be compassionate for people who are too old to take care of themselves anymore, or for people who are too young to take care of their educational needs and other needs. So compassion is an important part of the democratic philosophy. I want everybody to be comfortable. I'm not against rich people, and many of them do very impressive philanthropic work, but I want everybody to have enough to live decent and comfortable lives. And we're rich enough as a country to make that possible. We can do that, especially if we accept the fact that we should not be the policeman for the world. I don't mind us doing our part in preserving the order in the world today, but we shouldn't try to do it alone, as we've done so many times since the end of the Second World War. I was a bomber pilot in that war, but it gave me a lift every time I saw British planes in the air on our side. It gave me a lift to know that the 10 million strong Russian Red Army was pushing the Nazi forces out of the Soviet Union. So we can be warm-hearted. We can be concerned about those who are not as favorably positioned as we are, and we'll all be better for those concerns.
You were a great admirer of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was a wealthy man, but he was a compassionate man, and his opponents labeled him as a traitor to his class.
You know, one of the reasons why I think that Roosevelt was a compassionate man and identified with the problems of needy people is that he got infantile paralysis when he was a young man and could never walk or stand again without help. So he learned to depend on other people. He depended heavily on his wife, Eleanor. He depended heavily on the doctors, the nurses, and the hospitals. And it made him understand that he had an obligation as a wealthy American and later as President of the United States to help deal with the problems of these needy folks. You know, the Bible tells us in 100 different ways that we should have compassion for the poor and the sick and the blind and the homeless. And I think those are things that we need to remember while we are grateful for the blessings we've had as a country.
George McGovern joins us on the program. He's just published What It Means to Be a Democrat. A moment ago, you alluded to America's going overseas and getting involved in these conflicts. And in your second chapter, Fear and Defense Spending, you make a statement about all the money that we have poured into war. I believe somewhere in the book you say that we've spent $3 trillion on war-related costs in the last decade. That's a big chunk of our deficit.
It is, yeah. Actually, that $3 trillion is the estimated long-term cost of our invasion of Iraq. We had no business sending our army into Iraq. They had absolutely nothing to do with the 9/11 attack, and they were no threat to us or to anybody else, for that matter. And so we've got to take a look at some of these things we're doing on the international scene. Now, I don't want to be misunderstood. I'm an internationalist. I believe in the United Nations. I believe in the great agencies of the World Food Program of the United Nations, such as the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Food Program itself. But I don't believe in the United States, with all its power and all its wealth, that it's smart for us to intervene in complicated, conflicted places like the Middle East. We can help, but we shouldn't be going it alone. We shouldn't let the rest of the world think that we're the policeman that's going to maintain order, not only in our own country, but in everybody else's, even if that were desirable, which it's not. But even if it were desirable, we haven't got the resources to do it. We're $14 trillion in debt, and 75% of that is war debt. The cost of the Vietnam War, the cost of the Iraqi War, the cost of the war in Afghanistan. As I say, even if fighting those wars was important, we haven't got the money to finance it alone, and we shouldn't try to.
The debate that we seem to be having right now is over the very purpose of government. In your book, you state that we're at a crossroads as far as allocating financial resources. You mentioned the good things that the government has done over the years, FDR's programs. You mentioned the rural electric programs, which, had they been in effect earlier, might have illuminated a young George McGovern absconding with a watermelon.
Well, I confess, I got one dark chapter in my life when I was about 12 to 15. I would go into watermelon fields that went on for hundreds of acres, and my friends and I would swipe a watermelon and then take it somewhere and eat it. I don't think we broke up any of the watermelon groves, but it still wasn't our property. So is George McGovern always right? No, I stole watermelons as a teenager. One of my friends, when he saw the back door of a farmhouse open, and the farmer yelled out at us, he took off running for top speed with a big watermelon in his arms, and he didn't see a barbed wire fence coming. Oh. He hit that fence at full speed. If a guy can run 60 miles an hour, that's what he was doing. That watermelon exploded like a bomb. It drenched him in watermelon juice and two or three of the rest of us, but it made us think seriously about our life of crime.
You make the point in that chapter, The Purpose of Government, that the grand old party, the Republicans, celebrate the individual, but they need to also remember community and generosity. And speaking of generosity, the next chapter is food and hunger. And you have an account of a conversation that you had with John F. Kennedy during the 1960 campaign. He was coming to the Corn Palace in your hometown, and you gave him some advice.
Well, he had spoken before that day at the National Corn Picking Contest outside of Sioux Falls, and he laid an egg. It was raining, it was windy, it was cold. Somebody had written him an agricultural speech, which he didn't understand too well. After all, he was a Boston guy and a New York guy, and he wasn't familiar with South Dakota, Montana, Nebraska, Kansas, and so on. So he said, George, I've got to speak now in your hometown, Mitchell, South Dakota, the Corn Palace. I understand there are 5,000 or 6,000 people jammed into that corn. What should I do now? I said, Jack, if I were you, I'd throw away that speech. It's no good anyway. And I would go out there without a note and say, I think the farmers of South Dakota and North Dakota and Iowa and Wisconsin and Ohio can do more good in the world than any other instrument we have if we remember that food is power, food is strength, food is hope in a hungry, torn, bleeding world. And we're going to use our agricultural abundance to feed hungry people in India, in Pakistan, in Japan, which was still suffering from World War II, in China, which was still not on the advanced stage they are today. He got up and made that speech, and he said, if I'm elected, I'm going to name a Food for Peace director to come to the White House and direct a maximum effort to use our farm surpluses to feed hungry people abroad. And incidentally, he gave me that job.
He called you, didn't he, after he got elected?
He got elected by a half of a percentage point. I got defeated in South Dakota by about the same margin. He called up and said, well, George, I'm sorry I cost you that election in South Dakota. I said, Mr. President, you didn't cost me that election. It was the voters that decided they wanted somebody else in the United States Senate. No, he said, Bobby told me what was going on out there, and please come and see me before you make any plans. Well, yeah, he lifted me from the depths of despair to almost delirious hope, and that's when I got the job as Food for Peace director. I traveled the world feeding hungry people. I think it's fair to say that in a long career, I've fed more hungry people than any other person in the history of the world.
Hmm.
That's the conclusion of an Oxford historian who recently completed a book on historical feeding efforts.
Wow. My guest is George McGovern. His book is What It Means to Be a Democrat. For the last 30 years or so, we've heard rumblings from the Republican Party about shrinking government, about getting rid of whole departments of the government. In this book, you say, well, the Department of Homeland Security could go, but just last night, there was a Republican debate where one of the candidates couldn't remember all the departments he wanted to get rid of, but one of the ones that he mentioned was the Department of Education. And you have a wonderful quote from your old friend Gene McCarthy in this section of the book where you say, quote, the Republicans have a lot of good Republicans. They just never run any of them for office.
Well, they used to run good ones for office. I mentioned George Norris, the senator from Nebraska, La Follette from Wisconsin, Peter Norbeck from South Dakota, Cummins from Iowa. We've had a lot of good Republicans in the Congress and in the White House, and we need two good parties. We really do. We need the competition of a conservative party on one hand and a liberal party on the other. Now, one thing that does disturb me about some of these people who have announced they're running for the Republican presidential nomination is that they seem to hate the United States government. If you listen to them, and it's true also with some of the television people, especially on Fox TV, they seem to hate the United States government. I love the government of the United States. I have no hesitance in saying it's the best in the world. Does it make mistakes? Of course. The government is composed of human beings. But they do a lot of good things. I feel that the taxes I pay to the federal government bring me greater benefits than any other investment I make. And I think a lot of Americans feel that way. So we've got to stop talking about the federal government as though it's a monster sitting there in Washington ready to jump on us. It's not. It just find me a government around the world that's any better, and I'll pay your way to an Ohio State football game.
Okay.
So anyway, this is the way I feel about it. I admire the people that work for the United States government. Not always. Some of them are a little short on what I'd like to see, but basically, you travel the world as I have, and you'll come back glad that you live in the United States of America. What bothers me is this constant assailing of the federal government. Look at all the positive things the government does. We've got the most beautiful national parks, national forests in the world. We've got the Tennessee Valley Authority that has brought low-cost electricity to a dozen states in the South. We have Social Security, a wonderful program. Medicare, the only thing about Medicare, I would extend it to everybody. I've been getting it since I turned 65, and it's wonderful. It just means that the federal government pays your medical bills. And those medical bills are going up all the time as we get older, so I think we ought to extend that to every American. On education, it would cost a lot, of course, to provide education to all of the middle-income and low-income students. But you want to know something about the GI Bill that I benefited from after World War II? It educated about 8 million GIs. The government paid every dime of our education. I went all the way through to a PhD in history at Northwestern. But the government actually made money on it. And let me tell you why. All of us, after we got these fine educations, were earning more money than otherwise would be the case. So for the last 50 or 60 years, the federal government has been collecting more taxes from us 8 million that benefited that program. The government's made $2 for every dollar the program costs. I think the same thing would apply today if the government picked up the tab for higher education for low-income and middle-income youngsters. The very rich can pay for higher education. The middle class and the working class can't. So let's do something about that.
My guest has been George McGovern. His book is a very timely one. It's called What It Means to Be a Democrat. Senator, we really appreciate your time today.
It's a pleasure.
And that was George McGovern talking about his book, What It Means to Be a Democrat. And George would have turned 100 years old this month in July. And a number of years ago, I interviewed another former U.S. Senator, another former Democratic presidential candidate, John Glenn. And John had a story about how when he was a fighter pilot in Korea, he narrowly escaped being killed when he had a cannonball go through his wing, and he got back to the air base, and there was a gigantic hole in his wing. And George McGovern had his own close call on his mission over Linz, Austria, his second mission as a bomber pilot. A piece of shrapnel from flak came through the windshield and missed, fatally wounding him by only a few inches. We just never know, do we? And after that second interview with Senator McGovern, I told him a story about the time back in 1972, back in Des Moines. I was in high school, and I got a sign and put it in my mom's front yard, a sign that said, Iowa wants McGovern. And about an hour later, my grandfather, who was the mayor of a small town in southern Iowa and a longtime devoted Republican, he pulled up in his red Rambler, and he jumped out of the Rambler and sprinted across the yard and yanked that sign out of the yard and ran in and told my mother, somebody might have seen it. And he always told my mom how to vote. She'd vote straight Republican. And so I told Senator McGovern that story. And after he heard it, he laughed. He said, oh, he says, your grandfather, he's just like my parents. They were strict, hardcore Republicans, like most people in South Dakota. And he chuckled. He thought that was the cutest story, the funniest story. And I also told him about the time that I met him outside the Des Moines Register and Tribune and stood next to him. And there were only half a dozen people there. But the way that they cropped the photo in Newsweek magazine, it made it look like there was this huge crowd waiting for him. And there I was with my good friend Steve standing right next to George McGovern. And I was so thrilled the week after I met him to open the Newsweek magazine at our high school library and to see that photo. It was such a shock. I mean, how would we know that that would be in there? I was just casually perusing Newsweek magazine, and I flipped the page, and it's me looking out of the page standing next to George McGovern. That was so totally cool. It was one of the biggest thrills of my life. And I really thought that he had a chance to be elected president. It turned out that he didn't, and Richard M. Nixon was totally into dirty tricks. And at one point, some members of Nixon's committee to reelect the president actually planted McGovern campaign material in the apartment of Arthur Bremmer, the man who had tried to assassinate third-party candidate George Wallace of Alabama during that same campaign year, just to try to make it look like McGovern was somehow connected to George Wallace's assassin. I love American history, and I've really enjoyed bringing you these excerpts from interviews with Senator George McGovern as we mark what would have been his 100th birthday this month. For the Best of the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks, as always, for listening.